Hello and welcome to the EU and You. I'm Ellen Gunning, and in this series, I hope to explain the EU and its most important institutions. This week, I wanted to have a look at the Court of Auditors, so I began by having a quick word with Emmanuelle Shone Quinlivan. She's a lecturer with the Department of Government in UCC, author of a new book about the impact of the Kinnock reforms on the European Commission, and an expert on the European Union and French politics. Thanks for joining me, Emmanuelle.
Thank you very much.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the Court of Auditors today, and I suppose, can I begin with the most obvious question? What does the Court of Auditors actually do?
Well, the Court of Auditors, very simply, is actually the only public audit institution in the European Union. So it carries out audits on how the European monies is spent and how various institutions, and in particular the Commission, actually spends European monies. It wasn't actually, at the start, it's quite a young institution. It was actually created only in 1975 by a specific treaty and on budgetary issues. And
it's very young. It hasn't been there since the EC or the EEC as it was began.
Exactly. Unlike other institutions, you know, like the Commission and the European Parliament, even though the European Parliament evolved, but it was created as early as the European Coal and Steel Community. But the European Court of Auditors was only created in 1975 through this treaty, and actually started work in 1977. So it's just over 30 years old. The reason why it was created so late is actually because the budget or budgetary powers were quite limited at the very start concerning the European Parliament. And it's only when the European communities gained what is called own resources, which meant that the European budget became more supranational with contributions from member states, but very importantly, and that's the own resources part, just taxes and customs duties that the European communities were getting directly instead of states contributing to a budget. That's when the European budget became more supranational, and there was a feeling at that point that there was a big need for an auditing institution.
So, well, it actually makes sense because the way you're explaining it, if they didn't have control of their own monies and they weren't actually spending budgets,
exactly,
then they didn't need anybody to audit anything. But you are talking about sort of budgets of billions. And I suppose it is very difficult for any organisation to keep track of how the money, you know what the money is intended to be spent on, but to actually, it's like any good company, you do an audit to see was the money spent in the way that you intended and did you get best value for it? I presume that's their kind of primary function, is it?
That's exactly it, yeah. They actually took, I mean, obviously, because it was created after the, your three main institutions, let's say the European Commission, the European Parliament, and the Council of Ministers, it had to kind of find its own niche and create its own space. And there was a lot of institutional rivalry, as you can imagine. The three other institutions didn't want anybody to step on their toes.
Naturally.
And particularly the Commission really didn't want to be told, you're not doing your job, you're not spending your money properly.
And they do, in effect, audit the Commission, don't they? Because the Commission is responsible for spending the money, so they come in to make sure that the Commission did its job properly.
That's a big, and that has been, for the last 30-odd years, the biggest bone of contention between the Commission and the European Court of Auditors. The European Court of Auditors, despite being called a court, doesn't have judicial powers. So it cannot actually take, for example, the Commission to court. It cannot impose sanctions. But it has gained through, like, political influence and also just creating a bit more space and, in particular, strengthening its link, its link with the European Parliament. It's gained more and more salience and strength in the institutional framework. So yeah, the European Court of Auditors has really always been more or less at loggerheads with the European Commission, and that has been a feature for the last 30 years.
So is it a case that the Court of Auditors now works much more closely with the European Parliament, that it's almost two against one? You said they have no sanctions, but presumably if the Parliament sets the budget, then it's in the Parliament's interest to work with the Court of Auditors to make sure the Commission is doing its job.
Yes, you see, since... the European Parliament every year has got to give what is called the discharge of the budget. Basically say, yes, Commission, you did a good job in spending the money. And in order, because the European Parliament is made up of mainly politicians, obviously, and people who don't know much about this area, the Parliament is helped in kind of deciding on yes, you did a good job, or no, you didn't, by two different bodies, let's say. One is a committee from within the European Parliament, which is called after the French acronym COCOBU. It's the Committee for Budgetary Control. But the Committee for Budgetary Control actually decides itself on whether the Commission did a good job or not on the basis of the European Court of Auditors report. So that's where the European Court of Auditors has got quite a bit of influence. And I might give the probably the most prominent example of the European Court of Auditors' influence.
Please.
Is in 1999, the European Commission resigned on the basis of allegations of fraud, mismanagement and nepotism. And those
Now there's juicy, sorry. Fraud, mismanagement and nepotism,
and
all
nepotism.
In one roll. Okay.
Absolutely. It was all rolled in one. The discharge was on the 1996 budget, and the European Parliament was trying to decide yes or no, were money is properly spent. And you had several leaks in the Belgian press, actually, about various programs that hadn't been run properly. And in particularly the Da Vinci program about vocational training, and the European and Humanitarian Office, and etc. There was one particular commissioner that was targeted at the time, and it was the French commissioner in charge of the Da Vinci program, Edith Cresson. But at the time, there was no mechanism to actually fire a commissioner. So the Edith Cresson refused to resign, and the European Parliament tried to put pressure on the commission to resign itself. And it got to a point where the committee I was talking about within the European Parliament decided 13 votes against 14 decided in favour of the discharge. So they said, yes, okay, we'll grant you the discharge. But the European Parliament in its plenary session, which has the final say, ultimately, decided to bring forward a motion of censure against the European Commission.
So and the committee that this went before, this wonderful COCOBU committee,
yes.
That it went before, more or less decided in the end there was nothing they could do except allow the budget to go forward, if you like, or allow their audit to go forward,
exactly.
Even though they weren't happy with what had
they
happened.
They weren't happy.
But when it came to the Parliament, they said, no, we're not accepting the committee's recommendation. Is that right?
Exactly. They just wanted to push it a bit further. Now, I just have to bring you back to, that was early 1999, when they had to vote on it. Remember that in June 1999, we had coming European elections, so elections to the European Parliament. And obviously, there was probably some kind of issue of, you know, the European Parliament trying to flex its muscles and trying to kind of show to the European public opinion that they were there to actually monitor the Commission and that they were doing their job. So I think there was a bit of politics in there, definitely. So 15th of March 1999, the College of Commissioners met very late, actually, at night to decide what they were going to do. But they ended up, after 2 hours, announcing at midnight, before the press, this historical decision of resigning en masse and just on the basis of the report. So
and was that, sorry, this is probably more a political question, but I'm just curious, was that more supporting Edith Cresson or was it that they were just so annoyed that somebody had actually come in and come out with a report like this that they felt they were all, the integrity of all was being questioned? Was it more standing behind their person?
No.
Or group umbrage?
Yeah. They
That's a very non-political way of asking that question.
No, well, let's say that I carried out a number of interviews with commission officials and a few members of the European Court of Auditors a couple of years after that event. And obviously they have very different views on what happened, but definitely within the European Commission, it wasn't a feeling of we're going to support Edith Cresson. If only Edith Cresson had resigned, everything would have carried on like before. And they certainly, Edith Cresson also didn't have the right attitude, let's say. She took it very arrogantly, and I think it annoyed a lot of her colleagues.
Let me ask you a slightly different question. How is the court chosen? Are auditors, is there an auditor for each country, or how does it work?
Yes, now there's a member per country. They really went, and that's what, you know, you would say, they followed previous examples. So they very much followed the European Commission example, and they decided to pick one member from each, or one person from each member state. Now, the reason why I don't necessarily refer to them as auditors is that they can be auditors, and a lot of them are, but the treaty refers to or someone with specific qualifications. Now, as a result, the members are quite varied. It's not a very cohesive group of people. You have former politicians, you have former professional senior auditors, and you have finance officials. But as a result, very much you can feel within the European Court of Auditors, you have people who have very little, actually, qualifications when it comes to financial issues. So, it's very much a division between, like, former politicians and auditors. So.
And I presume the idea of a former politician being appointed is that, A, you can learn the skills, but that, B, there are people who audit. So really what you're doing is you're appointing somebody who heads a department, in effect, and makes sure that the work is done.
Yes, that's it.
Let me just very briefly ask you one final question. The future of the Court of Auditors, how is it likely to change? Crystal ball gaze a little for me. How is it likely to change in the next 10 or 20 years?
Well, I think it will become more, well, maybe it's unfair to say professional. I think it might become more about, particularly within the 27 members currently, that they will have a stronger requirement for to have auditing qualifications, and the political appointments might actually shrink a bit, you know.
The people appointed by each of the national governments will be more from a financial background.
Exactly, that they'll be picked for that particular reason. I think the European Court of Auditors is going to grow in strength. There's definitely, obviously, from the member states, a push for better management of European monies and more economy and efficiency and effectiveness.
For the moment, Emmanuel Sean Quinlivan, lecturer with UCC, thank you so much for joining me and for that fascinating insight into the Court of Auditors and my new expression for today, Coco Boo.
Yeah. Thank you.
Having learned from Emmanuel how the court works, I decided to pop over to the radio studio in Strasbourg to meet Eoin O'Shea, the Irish member of the Court of Auditors.
Eoin, thanks for coming in. I wanted to talk to you about what exactly the court actually does. Now, the court's job is to audit the money that's spent throughout Europe on behalf of the European citizens. Well, the European money that's spent, and to make sure that we get value for money and a good bang for our buck. How on earth do you do that?
Thanks very much for the question, Ellen. The European Court of Auditors is to the European Union a bit like what the Controller and Auditor General is to the Irish National Exchequer. We audit the funds spent by the European Commission and other bodies and report to the European Parliament and others to ensure that people can be confident that money given by the European taxpayer to the European Union is spent in accordance with the rules and regulations as it should be, and also that the accounts that the European Union produces are reliable and accurate.
So you're the good housekeeping guys. You make sure that what they said they did, they actually did.
That's absolutely correct.
Give me an example now. Have you found anywhere that where money should have been spent, it wasn't spent properly, or have you saved us any money? Give me some examples of what you found.
Ellen, the major role an auditor does is to actually do the audit, and it has a deterrence effect. Obviously, if one is doing a job and one knows somebody's looking over the shoulder, you do that job in that knowledge. And
a bit more carefully, yeah.
Yeah, a bit more carefully. And the Court of Auditors' reports are published. They're widely covered in the media. And, you know, criticism of a person in their job by the auditor is taken very seriously. But we do publish many, many reports. We publish, the major report is the annual report published every year. And for example, in our last annual report, we noticed a certain instances that were printed there. Agriculture, as you may know, is one of the largest expenditures the European Union has. Out of the 130 billion budget, roughly half of it is spent on agricultural supports of various kind. To receive the agricultural support, the farmer must keep their land in good agricultural conditions. And we found in a particular instance that a single farm payment was being claimed in respect of land that was being used to dump waste on.
The cheeky beggar. I presume they assumed that it would never be found.
Well, there are various auditing bodies, the Commission, and the Court of Auditors. So there's always somebody at the end of the line to check on these things. So,
and I presume in that case then their funding was completely withdrawn.
In respect of that matter, there is a corrections and recovery mechanism. In total, about 3 billion is subject to a correction and recovery mechanism every year out of the European Union's total budget.
And would that be mostly agriculture?
It would be across the whole range. About 50% of European spending is in agriculture.
Another probably 50% of the errors or whatever that you would identify would be agriculture as well?
It's not that clear cut. The error rate in agriculture, the court has found, has last year was below 2%. The error rate in relation to cohesion funding, which is structural funding, is about 11%. So the
that's very surprising, because you think of agriculture. Now it could be just me, but you think of agriculture as individual farmer filling in all these forms, applying to Europe for money. But cohesion funding is arm of government, civil servants. They have all the backup that should actually mean that they have very few errors.
The agricultural system is subject to a control mechanism, which includes things like Eye in the Sky, which looks down to make sure that you know, the land is green, etc. And it's subject to very stringent national controls.
I never realised you went to that kind of detail, that there was an eye in the sky that checked that the land really was farming land, or had been set in trees or whatever.
Yes, indeed. The common agricultural policy is at the very heart of the European Union, and the funding of farm funding has been in place, as many people know, for a very long time. So the systems over the years have become better and better and better, and that means the error rate has been dropping, because it's much easier to control. The cohesion funding is more ad hoc projects. For example, you can only build a road once, whereas, you know, farmers get payments every
year. It's ongoing.
It's ongoing. And it's much easier to control the ongoing thing, because the controls get better and better as time goes on.
And tell me about the kind of controls, or what you found now with food aid to the developing world, because that's a huge issue in itself, with people really wondering, I suppose, looking at Europe and saying, yes, we should be doing good, we should be trying to help people, but then also wondering, how is the money spent, and is it spent properly, and does it go astray? That must be a nightmare trying to keep track of.
The European Union gives about 10 billion euro every year in terms of overseas development assistance.
That's huge.
It's a huge block of money. It does a lot of good. The court monitors that funds very closely. And, for example, last year we did a major report on spending on health in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, the southern part of Africa. Mm-hmm. We found that the European Union, we recommended the European Union should spend more of its money on eradicating diseases like AIDS and TB. We found at the time that roughly about 5% of funds going into sub-Saharan Africa from the European Union was spent on health. And we found that it was recommended that 15% should be spent in that way. And I know that the European Parliament recommended that 20% should.
Yeah, because even 15% doesn't seem a lot when you look at the kind of damage that HIV/AIDS is doing in sub-Saharan Africa. It's a much bigger problem
exactly.
than food.
Yeah, it's not often you see an auditor recommending, you know, that the
yes, that more money should be spent.
More money, but we evaluated the situation. We found that the best way that great value was achieved by spending more money and eradicating those diseases.
And does that come back as a recommendation from you then?
It did. It came back as a recommendation. It was published in a special report in the all of the languages of the European Union. And the commission responded that they were increasing the funding in that particular area.
So it was one example of the Court of Auditors looking at something and saying, it's not that you're doing anything wrong and the money that you're spending is being spent fine, that's grand, we're happy with it, but we think you're probably spending it in the wrong place. Have a look again.
In that particular matter, it was the focus on initially it was decided that 15 to 20% should be spent in this area. We found, looking at the spending, that it wasn't, and that there was an opportunity to do good by increasing the proportion of funds spent on eradicating those particular diseases. Just an example of the type of work the Court of Auditors do. It's not just the penny-pinching side of things, but also making sure that European funds are spent in the best possible way.
And what other interesting stories now would have come out of the annual report, say, last year?
Well, there was a particular project. A water pipeline was put in a particular country, but it was found, in fact, that the dam that was supposed to populate the pipeline with water wasn't actually available. So one had...
Okay, so we had a gorgeous state-of-the-art pipeline going to a dam that didn't work.
Correct.
Wow. What did you do there?
We reported it in our annual report. It was brought to the appropriate authorities. And then, of course, it's up to the Commission then to put the project through what they call the correction and recovery mechanism. Which
okay, so
look
they
for the
kind
money
of
back.
Sanction or look for the money back or whatever.
Yes.
And was it, I don't know if you even know, but was it a deliberate error or was it a genuine mistake that somebody just completely screwed up the whole engineering and figured that the dam would be capable and wasn't?
I don't know the technical answer to that, but like any other European taxpayer, the very fact of that particular thing happening is enough to raise hackles on your neck.
It is. And actually, it's the kind of thing that you listen to this programme, you go away and you say, did you hear about the pipeline that was built to a dam that had no water in it? What about the whole argument, I don't know if you're involved in it at all, but what about the whole situation of looking at how difficult it is to apply for funding throughout Europe? That if you're a farmer, it seems to be a constant gripe for farmers, but even for community groups who will tell you that there's European funding available, or for the likes of the Dell workers who need to apply, it seems to be almost that you need a professional to help you to make application for money that your MEP or whoever has said is there for you.
Yes, the court is very mindful of that, and we published an opinion earlier this year, and that opinion called for the simplification of a lot of the rules and procedures that apply when one is in receipt of European Union funding. Basically, the court recognises that the more rules and regulations that one has, and the more difficult it is to follow them, and the easier it is to break them. We don't need gold-plated rules. We need correct rules which assure the European taxpayer on this at the same time that money is, you know, properly spent. But simplification is something that the court is recommending, and I know that the Commission are also looking at it.
It would seem to be very logical that if you can agree that in order to achieve X grant, really the things we need to satisfy us that you qualify are these four or six or whatever,
yes,
and then try and make the form simple enough that it's almost a tick the box. Have you included proof of these six areas? Because that's really what we need. It goes from you to the Commission. It's an area that I wouldn't have been conscious that the Court of Auditors was involved in at all. I knew you audited. I didn't realise that you also looked beyond that, either on the food health issue or on the simplification of forms, that you're constantly looking to improve the system from your point of view, but from the citizens' point of view as well.
Oh, absolutely. One of the positive things the court does is encourage control compliance. It's not just enough for an auditor to come back after the year end and criticise. We have to encourage things to be gotten right for the start. So we encourage the Commission and other people who spend European money to put controls in place at the start, so that if those controls are followed, then that it means that error rates will be minimised.
And can I be really cheeky? Have you got a big stick? What if they don't pay any attention to you? What if they say, thank you very much for your opinion, now go away?
Our big stick is our reputation and our independence and our ability to articulate to the European Parliament what has been done with the money that they sanctioned in the budget that was given to them by the European people. It's a political decision. Once we write our report, it enters the political domain. We as auditors say what we see without fear or favour, doing the job on behalf of the European taxpayer.
I'm sure if they did that for half of the banks and the ordinary businesses around Europe, now loads of people will be delighted with it. Just as a final question, how big is the European budget that you're responsible for, and how much money do you reckon you save each year? They're two huge questions, I know, but
it's difficult. The European budget is somewhere in and around 130 billion. How much the European Court of Auditors saves is a question that I don't know the answer to. The major role of an auditor is to be independent, and the major role of an audit is the deterrent effect, so that somebody doing their job knows someone's looking over their shoulder, so they do that job more carefully. It's impossible to know how much that saves.
That's a very good point, because if you could put a figure on how much you actually went back through that clawback system, you still couldn't put a percentage on how much money did you save just by people implementing best practice.
Yeah. If there were no controls at all, there wouldn't be the correction mechanism, and that deals with about 3 billion every year. Also, the implementation of various controls, and you can see over years the error rates dropping, and each percentage drop is about worth 1.3 billion to the European taxpayer. Also, money being better spent rather than either spent or not spent is also important, as I pointed out with the issue related to health spending in Southern Africa.
Well, Onoshe, I have to tell you, you actually bring the whole area of auditing alive. I am dying to look at the next annual report to see what you find. For today, thank you for joining me, and thank you for that insight.
Thanks very much, Ellen.
You've been listening to 103.2 Dublin City FM. This series was presented and produced by Ellen Gunning. Sound engineering was by David O'Grady. The series was made with the assistance of the Department of Foreign Affairs Communicating Europe Initiative.